And so, to emphasize this teaching that is talking about rhythm of breath and fullness of breath, I'm reading from the text, The Mysticism of Sound by Anayat Khan. And this is the section titled, an excerpt from the section titled Rhythm. Rhythm plays an important part not only in the body, but in the mind also. The change from joy to sorrow, the rising and fall of thoughts, and the whole working of the mind show rhythm, and all confusion and despair seem to be accounted for by the lack of rhythm in mind. In ancient times, healers in the East, and especially those in India, when healing a patient of any complaint of a psychological character, known either as an obsession or an effect of magic, excited the emotional nature of the patient by the emphatic rhythm of their drum and song. At the same time, making the patient swing the head up and down in time with the music. This aroused the patient's emotions and prompted the patient to tell the secret of their complaint, which had been hidden under the cover of fear, convention, and forms of society. The patient confessed everything to the healer under the spell produced by the rhythm, and the healer was enabled to discover the source of the malady. The words thoughtful and thoughtless signify a rhythmic or unrhythmic state of mind and balance, which is the only upholding power in life, is kept by rhythm. Respiration, which keeps mind and body connected, and which links the mind and soul, consists in keeping rhythm every moment when awake or asleep. Inhaling and exhaling may be likened to the moving and swinging of the pendulum of a clock. As all strength and energy is maintained by breath, and as breath is the sign of life, and its nature is to flow alternatively on the right and left side, all this proves rhythm to be the greatest significance in life. As rhythm is innate in human beings and maintains our health, so upon rhythm depends all a person's affairs in life, our success, our failure, our right acts and our wrong acts. All are accounted for in some way or other by a change of rhythm. The instinct of flying in the bird is a rhythmic movement of the wings. And it is the same tendency of rhythmic contraction that makes the fish swim and the snake glide. A keen observation shows that the whole universe is a single mechanism working by the law of rhythm. The rise and fall of the waves, the ebb and flow of the tide, the waxing and waning of the moon, the sunrise and the sunset, the change of the seasons, the moving of the earth and the planets, the whole cosmic system, and the constant constitution of the entire universe are working under the law of rhythm. Watch our breath and observe the rhythm. Let the rhythm be even, like the swinging of the pendulum of a clock, like the rise and fall of a wave. Waxing and the waning of the moon. Can we tune into that rhythm of the universe? I mean, we're the fabric of that universe. We're connected intricately to it. As we breathe in, we absorb, and as we breathe out, we expel out anything that is not useful or wholesome to assimilate. We release it. Body and the emotions, spirit, the fabric of our being, the nervous system become calm and settled. So it's like that metaphor they give to a jar of water with dirt in it. When it's all shaken up, it has the tendency to be cloudy. But if allowed to sit still, the sediment settles and it becomes clear. things. Are there any questions or anything that any of you would like to share?
Yes. I believe the book Breath Walk, the author says if you just breathe 4 cycles per minute, you will have healed yourself of virtually everything and you will be totally whole. Mm. Well, why in the world would anyone be sick if they just knew the truth?
It's nice too, and slowing one's breath down to that pace is...
Better yet, slow it down to one breath a whole day like a real yogi.
Yeah.
How we work up to that is a challenge.
Thank you.
I haven't experienced it last night.
Yes.
Interesting, because it relates to that. I woke up and I apparently had been having a dream that had me very fearful. And the first thing I noticed when I woke up was that my breathing was very shallow and almost like I wasn't breathing at all, and felt like fear was gripping me. So the first thing I did was tell myself to breathe more deeply, and I changed the rhythm of my breath and then was able to very quickly let go of that and go back to sleep and not have the dream any longer.
Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. And the powerful that you could get your wits about you to apply that right away.
Well, it's come, I think, from me focusing more on how am I breathing right now. And so when I woke up, that was the first thing I thought, well, how am I breathing?
Yeah. Yeah. Great teaching. Watch. Watch your breath. Watch the breath. Thank you for sharing. Yes.
From Roger. This breathing method reminds me of a Sufi form of Tonglen.
It is, yes. I can see that too.
Of what?
Tonglen. Tonglen in Tibetan Buddhism is the practice of the breath, receiving and giving out. And in that form, one is, in a way, it's almost reversed. One contemplates, and it can be done at many levels. Would you all like to hear this?
Yes,
some of you know, some of you don't know. And our guests that are joining us from Skype, would you like an elaboration? Is it okay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The practice is called receiving and giving. And in the tradition, and again, it's done very subtly. It can be done for one's immediate condition. It can be done for something in the environment. It can be done for another person or a group of people or some sort of collective. And so the premise is here in the Sufi practice, we were absorbing something that was nurturing us and we were expelling things that were not. In this practice, it is reversed. We're actually breathing in anything within our own being, the environment, or someone else that is actually negative or unwholesome. And the premise here is that you absorb that, and when you absorb it with this a kind of visualization. And in Tibetan Buddhism, the visualization is quite elaborate. I mean, you may even be visualizing snakes and spiders and scorpions and black goo and cloud. I mean, you know, it's a real... I mean, the Tibetans are beautiful in that way. They give these really elaborate visualizations. It helps keep the mind tied a bit, too. And then one transforms that by absorbing and with then breathing out the concentration that I'm willingly taking this into my being. And what I'm offering back in return is peace, health, calmness, beauty, love, compassion. So, in a way, that practice is really intended to contradict the natural tendency in ourselves where it's kind of me first. And to be on guard. And it's a way of, in the Tibetan tradition, they say, to overcome self-cherishing.
Could you do that for a sick person or a sick animal? Mm-hmm. Would you have to be a pretty healthy person yourself in the first place to do that?
Yes, and if one has a malady within one's own being, one can use this for oneself as well. Now, it is said that historically the practice was done by the lepers in Tibet. Mm-hmm. With this idea, and this is also part of the concentration, and it's part of the concentration, for example, if we suddenly lose a loved one and we're so shocked and in such pain, we might say to ourselves, well, you know, I'm already feeling bad. So, you know, maybe I could feel worse, maybe I won't feel worse, but the point is I'm feeling bad. So with that thought, I will absorb, for example, maybe all the other people that have lost a loved one and are in such despair, I'll absorb that despair and I'll offer what I can back to them as love and comfort. Then, in a way, we are also getting some of that. You know, we don't do it with that intention, but it's changing our mind in a way to project that out. So one could also do that for oneself. It's I don't necessarily recommend this practice, but I think if one is given that practice by their teacher, then there's a reason for that. But at the same time, I have found it very helpful in even transforming my own maybe negative pattern of thinking or viewing a circumstance. I can sometimes overcome that. Or if I feel something of a negative vibration may be coming, I can absorb it and offer back love and peace. And you know, we always need more of that in the world. But anyway, what I was saying was in Tibet, they said that the lepers used to do this practice thinking, oh my God, you know, my flesh is rotting, I'm in terrible pain, and, you know, I don't look so great either. And there have been cases that they were actually cured of their illness by doing the practice, because the thought of that transformation transformed their minds, their hearts, and even their flesh. How extraordinary is that?
It's gorgeous.
You know?
Yeah.
Oh.
Another thing I like, if I'm sleeping at night and wake up, I will do, I think you call it yogi mudra, yoni mudra, this.
Mm-hmm.
You take it all in and you hold it as long as you can and start visualizing the different chakras. And what that does, supposedly, is suffocates the kundalini, so he's suffocating and he wants to
rush up.
That's fun.
Well, we will, you know, eventually I'm leading to a practice that's called Chagall, that's that practice in Sufism. And part of the intention is to become aware of that internal world, which is really so vital, but that we rarely attune
to. It is so superior. Who would want anything in the external world?
Well, and it's an interesting dance, isn't it, to be able to do both, yeah. But it's to tune us to that inner world.
But you can have something going on inside you. I remember when Rinpoche was here, we were going through all that practice, through those sessions. And that was the same thing, that I had a lot going on inside of me. And then when I had to go, and I found out what it was right around that time, but I think it helped me because I mean, I went through the operation, went through all the surgery, no pain, no anything, and healed like how much faster than I healed, like 5 times that they thought I was going to,
mm-hmm.
like supposed to be in intensive care 5 days. I was in a day and a half, and I only stayed overnight because they made me so that I could get the right room for me. I was supposed to be in the hospital, how long? 2 or 3 weeks?
At least.
And I was in 1 week. And if it was cancer, I would have to start treatment, and there would be no Florida, because we had reservations to leave on the 20th of December, and the operation was on the 20th of November. And the first thing out of my surgery, before they got me into intensive care, I remember saying, Are we going to the beach? Are we going to the beach? It's the first words out of my mouth, wasn't it?
Yes, you are going to the beach.
And
you decide.
And Mark, he was called in the middle of the operation, but they didn't know his. Well, you don't have the same surgeon as when you went in. You had another doctor. His name's Righteous, but I don't know how to. We don't know how to pronounce it. And I said Righteous.
His way. Forget that.
Righteous. R-E-I-T-H-T-I-G-S. I said that. And then he told them, there's no way she's going to. No way. Because you're going to have to start treatment. And treatment's going to be, You know what? Guess what?
You walked out of there.
No, we're on 20th of March. 20th of December, we went to the beach.
Yes. Absolutely. You choose your life. You don't let them have any power.
We went to the beach, and I was still supposed to be recuperating in the hospital by the 20th.
So are you doing special breathing exercises then?
Well, I'm just saying that, you were asking if you had something going on inside, was it good to do all that, and, have all this, think of this. But we were doing that when the Ricochet was here. We were doing that session right before...
Kumto Rinpoche was here, and we were doing the Tonglen practice.
And I had all that going on inside of me, and I didn't know it, but I did. But then when I went through all, a week later when I found out and then went in for all that, it was like, everything was...
Okay.
It didn't hurt. What I'm saying, it helped, just like the lepers.
Yeah. The breath is...
It's all you need, really.
Everything. Yeah, it is.
Breath
that's all
spirit.
We need. Yes, that's right.
And chocolate. They talk about the runner's high.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Runners really breathe.
Breathe, that's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Anything else or any other questions? And how was the breath for you? Was it helpful to have that feeling of absorption and expelling? Could you do that? Could you feel that?
It was actually kind of challenging, I think, because oftentimes I more think about Tonglen. So I was glad when Roger brought that practice up, because I was also reflecting on that, but how it is the opposite. And so expelling something that's the opposite of what I'm bringing in, I mean, it's kind of like, well, should I feel bad about that? There's those things coming up for me.
Well, those are things that come up for a lot of people. Should I address that? Would you like for me to? Because, one has to always remember that what we give out is also useful to other beings. So like cow manure is very helpful. I mean, they're expelling waste from their body, but it's used for fertilizing fields, and it's also used for fuel and all kinds of things. And we have so many things in this environment that we can't say maybe they need what we're expelling too. And even to bring Kumto Rinpoche into it again, he used to say to us, and he still does, if we'd ask him, he would say, when you make a pee-pee or a poop, you flush the toilet and you snap your fingers to call the beings that are nourished by that substance. And you say, Om Mani Padme Hum. If you spit, whatever, you again say, Om Mani, because something comes to take that in. It can be useful, so it's not like we... do you understand?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, thank you.
I think our minds do these things. This is good, this isn't good, this is useful, this isn't useful, this is healthy, this isn't healthy. It's always that... we have that binary system somehow built in.
Rumi
true,
says out
false,
there there's
yes,
a
no.
field, I'll meet you there,
yeah.
Beyond all good.
That's
and
right,
evil.
That's
judgment.
Right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Steph, do you know this, the cow mudra? is when you take these two fingers and alternate them, and that is to purify and make us very, very sensitive. But I can't understand why, if this is the air and fire fingers, fire and air, I guess, and this could be earth and water. Can you explain any more about that, how it's purifying us when we do that?
I have no idea.
Okay, I'll keep trying.
Yeah, I don't know about that so much.
I don't think the good bad is built in so much. I think we teach it to our children very young.
Could be,
I've
yes.
For some reason this week it's been coming to me that some of the things that as adults we have to learn we already knew when we were children and we lost it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how's it really like? Calm gives a beautiful teaching about unlearning. And in the Bible it also says, be ye as little children.
Well, that breath, I wouldn't know because I heard it. It was the doctor on television. But you breathe in four times. Right. No cross.
Right.
Breathe in. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And then you breathe out. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And they said, you know, if you got pain or anything like that, you know, something's going on with you, they said, and the least times you do it is four times. You have to do that practice four times. But you can do it 12, you can do it all day long, you can do it whatever. But I don't know I don't know whether it's Tibetan or whether it's this or whatever, yoga or whatever. But the thing is that I've done it, and it works. You have no pain, and you get rid of it. And I don't know, Cecily, my other daughter, says you should never hold your breath. You know, like, 1, 2, 3, 4, 7. And she tells me not to, but, you know, so that isn't right. You're never supposed to breathe in and hold it. But then you breathe out 8. But I know it works, because it worked for me exactly last night. I don't know. I've got this little thing, which is not anything actually, but sometimes I've got something, and it sometimes lasts for an hour or so. I can't move my hands, and I can't move my legs. The muscle, and it could be a reaction from chemotherapy, the medication. But you know what? Every time I do those breaths like that, the pain goes away, and it all relaxes, and it's gone.
So you're talking about Kambaka, you breathe in 8, hold 8.
You breathe
eight,
in 4,
exhale.
You go, breathe in. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hold it on 7. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm just counting now. Mm-hmm. And then breathe out 8. And the first couple times you breathe, I kind of cough on the 8th. But then after the other one or two times, you just breathe out normally. I mean, I think it just comes out, whatever it is with me, you know, I just end up coughing at the end of it. But it works. I don't care what practice it's called, but I will tell you, if you have pain or something going on, it will work.
Well, and
getting rid of headaches. Have you not gotten rid of headaches that way, Stephanie? You know?
I don't have the tendency to do the breath in that way.
Well, yeah, but I remember you leaving places and... Okay.
Do we have some comments there?
Amina mentioned the triangle breathing practices that you gave last time or last class have been working great in CAPS for me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Good. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we hold the breath on that practice as well. Yeah, those breaths can be life-transforming, can't they, Amina?
They sure are.
Shall we do the triangle breath?
Yes.
We haven't done that. We haven't really done any formal, practice.
Will you review it?
I certainly will. And I'm glad that you're taking notes. So there are two forms of the triangle breath. The first one is with the point of the triangle pointing downward. And that can be visualized either in front of one or in the area of the forehead. And it is said that this practice is intended to be done when one is trying to accomplish something, wishes to accomplish something. And when this accomplishment requires willpower. So with the triangle pointed downward, it is associated with accomplishment and willpower. The practice begins with what's called the Jalal breath. Jalal breath. And that is the breath that is divine power, might, will, courage. And so as one is breathing in, one is feeling the absorption of this divine energy that then when breathing out, one uses to accomplish something. So we'll perform this first breath and then we'll switch. But before we switch, I'll also explain that. So it is an alternate nostril breathing. And as we breathe, we are again concentrating on the triangle down. We will breathe in the left nostril first to the count of four. And we will hold while tracing the top line of the triangle, and then we'll breathe out right, and we'll trace, it's like as if we're tracing with our mind this triangle, the left side holding across the top of it, and then down, the angle back down to the point. Again, as one is doing the breath, the first in the series is breathing in the left, holding out the right. In left, hold out right. The concentration is on the absorption of divine energy. Breathing in, holding, letting the energy of that build, and then breathing out through the right nostril with the intention to put this will behind some sort of spiritual or material accomplishment. Just count myself.
Okay, I have it here.
Okay, sure. So we'll start with breathing in left, hold out right, and we'll. Okay, so breathe out. 2, 3, 4. In left. Hold. Outright. In left. Hold. Outright. In left. Hold. Outright. Relax. change the direction of the breath, and the breath becomes more jamal, receptive. So you see, there is an esoteric reason here. You know, one of the things that's very good, I mean, if you think about it, you send the children to play, and then you know they'll come home and they'll relax and be more receptive and calm. It's the same thing with us when we go to meditate. Sometimes we have to do the practices that are more active, and then we are able to calm down and go into a more contemplative state. People often ask me how to organize their practices, but one might consider that. Anayat Khan gave the breaths in the more jalal fashion, more active fashion than moving to the receptive. It was a way of kind of expelling energy and then allowing the system to become more receptive. So here we would like to turn our minds to something that we're maybe seeking inspiration or insight into. We'll hold and out the left. So breathe out, 2, 3, 4, in right. Hold. Out left. In right. Hold.
Seems like it's a paradox. If that was the second one we just did, that would be more the fire triangle of passion and enthusiasm and warmth instead of the water. Just the opposite.
We flip the triangle so that it is pointing upwards now. The base is at the bottom.
Oh, I think that's just what we did, excuse me.
Yeah, I had thought so, Diane. So in the first two practices, my dear, the triangle is pointing downward, and now for these next two, it will be pointing upward.
Thank you.
Yes. First, may I explain a little bit here? So, the breath here is held on the out-breath instead of the in-breath. And this practice is intended to gain mastery over the first practice, which we'll do, is to gain mastery over some play of the ego. And even thinking that one doesn't have a play of the ego is a play of the ego. So there's always very subtle levels of this practice. So it's a very good practice to do on an ongoing basis, I would think. But here we're trying to overcome something. And the ego is like a two-sided coin, like all coins. And on one side, there can be this pride, and on the other side can be humility. But sometimes even our humility can be a play of the ego. So the best one can do is to try to be natural, because we can't, if we're naturally happy or celebratory, well, then we are. If others interpret it in some way, then it's their interpretation. But also, if we go around with our heads hung down, and sometimes, yes, we want to hang our heads down, but if we're doing it because we think we should be doing it, then that's also false, and that's also the ego. But if we feel naturally that way, and that's okay too, then that's just being natural. So here the triangle, again the base is down and the point is going up. And we begin again with the Jalal breath, which is breathing in the left and out the... we breathe in left, out right, and then hold. Then in left, outright, hold. Okay. So again, the intention is to develop a strategy for overcoming some play of the ego. Okay, so we start by breathing out, 2, 3, 4, in left, right, hold, in left, out right, hold, in left, out right, hold. Now we reverse this process, and here we're seeking or setting the intention to awaken a quality of our soul. To awaken a quality of our soul. Again, the triangle is pointing upward. And in this breath, we will breathe in first from the right, out the left, and then hold. In right, out left, and hold. You see, it's the holding and the out breath. It's very small. It's very small in this practice, but it is a form of self-denial. And denying, one could say, the small self. This small self that says, I must breathe now. In that out-breath and the holding of the out-breath, perhaps there's a spark, something that gets sparked and awakened in our being. It's almost like, you've heard people say that perhaps we're in a near-death experience or a terrible crash. Those things what were so vital in their lives are the things that come to mind. It's like that. When we're holding that breath, when we're denying that in-breath, perhaps something that's very vital, yet maybe hidden in the being, becomes awakened. So, we'll begin. begin the breath by breathing out, and then we'll breathe in right, out left, hold. Okay. Breathe out, 2, 3, 4, in right, out left, hold. In left, right, excuse me, I'm sorry. Out left, hold. In right, out left, hold. And relax. Questions or any comments on the practice?
The last one doesn't come too natural for me. It doesn't seem very natural to hold on the out breath, but trying to hold on the in breath.
Breath. Yeah, we're accustomed to that.
Yeah.
And it's as I said also that it's that very denial that can be most useful.
So when you're picturing the triangle, the base of it is kind of where you're holding.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
In each instance, whether it's inverted or right side up.
Roger has a question.
Yes.
We should be done with our prayers, or are they a separate practice?
It depends on if they've been assigned to you, Roger. And if they've been assigned to you, you can do them with your prayers. But also, they may be useful as a separate practice. Does anyone want to comment on that?
The more the better.
That's right, Diane. Prima Gita, what about you? Do you do them as part of your series?
Mm-hmm.
And you too, Kabri?
Yeah. Can I say something?
I would wish you would, yes.
I think actually it was probably in January, and I know that at the time I was just feeling very, very burnt out from just the demands of work, and it was just a place that I was in. And in the January meditations on the message class, we did these triangle breaths. And so I went home and I felt it was important to study them further. And so I started doing the practices. And one of the things that I really felt was significant was to recognize how they're different than the purification breaths also, because what I felt was happening was that a magnetism was being restored, and energy was being restored through those practices. And I just felt really spent and like there was nothing physically or mentally or spiritually, and it just really, and they're done for such a short period of time. Mm-hmm. But over time, doing them daily too, I felt that they did build in a way. There was a felt progress. And I feel very different now, several months later, than I certainly did then. And I feel that it is a result of doing these practices.
Mm-hmm. So. It should be required by law.
Yes, that's right. Why don't we just pass a law right now? Yeah.
By medical law, anyway.
Well, they would never, well, never mind.
They, you know, okay. Yeah, I know what you're going to say. You don't have to say it.
Cabrilla.
Yeah, I mean, and I've talked about this before in this class in terms of just having a lot that has needed to be accomplished, and I found that through using or doing these breaths, I was able to accomplish things in and not in a struggling to accomplish it kind of a way, but in a like things would happen smoother and easier than I had anticipated that they would, and so it's been interesting watching that. Then there's also, with the Jalal and the Jamal, I've been really, it's been interesting because I've seen that increase of capacity of being able to accomplish, but I felt like over the past month, but specifically, it's been more on the side of Jalal. And I bring this up because I've been working on a project at work that's very creative, and I've been stuck. So now, the past couple of days, I realized, gosh, I must just really be in that active accomplishment mode, and now I need to be in another mode. So I've been kind of working more, well, not necessarily working more, but really focusing more, I think, on that more Jamal aspect of the practice. It's been interesting. And feeling some inspiration coming since I've started making that change. So
I'm responding to that word capacity, mm-hmm. because there's a capacity in both. Mm-hmm. And there's a capacity to receive that, oh. you know, mm-hmm. and there's also a capacity to act. And that was, a really good word for me, anyway, in response to my own experience, to kind of describe that. Mm-hmm. Because it's almost like it increases capacity for either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very powerful practice. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the most of the immersion.
Yes, is there some question?
Yes.
From Alima. How important is it to be thinking of the concentration while doing the practice?
The concentration being the triangle or the concentration of willpower or overcoming ego or...
Alima, do you want to go ahead and turn on your... either type or hold on 1 second, I have to turn off my metronome going in the background. Okay, Alima, go ahead.
I was thinking in terms of the concentration that you spoke of, divine light, will, courage, for example.
To be
thinking of that while doing it.
Did you say divine will and those aspects?
Mm-hmm. Yes, for example.
Well, let me ask you, what do you think?
Well, I think it became simpler today, more after hearing you describe it, a lot more clear, rather than just the mechanics of, you know, what side to breathe in and where to hold. it, but I just was hoping maybe you would speak a little more on it.
I think that almost everything in life has to do with one's intention. It has to do with one's intention and one's motivation. I really believe that's true. Now, our intentions and our motivations may be misinterpreted, but here's the power of that teaching, or the quote of, isn't it Shakespeare, to thine own self be true? Because if we know what our intention is, and we know what our motivation is, well, it can change the world. We have good examples of that. You know, Gandhi said, conquer your enemies with love. Leo's giving an affirmation to that. And
he just ignored him.
And Gandhi also said, with regard to one's enemies, first they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. what can I say, Alima? Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
You're welcome. I'm so glad to hear your voice.
You know, like what Carrie was saying about that January meditation. Well, you know, I think that everybody has, you had yours because you were spent. And I remember I was full of energy after that, but mine was something else that I was had on my mind in January. So I think it's everybody's, whatever their, I mean, you don't even have to say, okay, it's for this because I'm spent, okay, it's for this for my healer. You just know inside what you're doing it for. And I think it's each individual person that does it. Whatever they're doing it for, I mean, you already know. You don't even have to think what it is. You already know.
It's true. And to give the framework, though, of the intention, like I understand that there's maybe some play of my ego that's interfering with my capacity, so to speak. Or I understand that perhaps there's something inside me that is trying to come to fruition. A lot of times we have an inkling of that, and it can almost be create anxiety or frustration if we know there's something there, but we can't yet give birth to it. So these practices help in that unfoldment. Does that make sense? So setting kind of that intention prior to the breath can help facilitate that. I think. I mean, it's my experience, but I can't speak for everyone. But then I do trust Hazrat and Icon and what he teaches. And so I said, he gives it to us for a reason. We might as well use it and see what happens. And I don't think anyone expects anyone. I certainly don't. I don't think Hazrat and Icon, his path was about spiritual liberty, not about developing dogma or belief systems. The Buddha also said that. You must test these things for yourself. If they're of value, then you use them. And if they're not, then you don't. Go on and find something that's useful. There's no requirement. It's true. Dalai Lama also says that.
Yeah, just do whatever. Don't. It's whatever religion is, don't do it because it's a religion, you're going to do it for this. But keep your own religion and do it, and if it works, it works.
Well, and I think too, there's, it is both ways. Because even with these the triangle breath, I mean, I remember after January just noticing that difference. Not necessarily having wanted it, but that it happened. But mm-hmm. then now I look at the practice and I think, well, what else do I need to work with that practice? What are those other more subtle ways? It's almost like mm-hmm. the more that you work with it, the more that the practice teaches you.
It's one hopes that it will always be. It's like saying the prayers for 20 years and all of a sudden, like a line, all of a sudden becomes so important. And maybe one has said that all the time but not really noticed the vibration of that particular line in that prayer. Mm-hmm. And then it's teaching something, you know, or reading an icon for so many years and then all of a sudden, whoa, that was really a very subtle thing there and I hadn't noticed it before, that it's always, we're always being, those opportunities are always there, aren't they? If we're awake.
I have a question. John Gray has a book out called What You Feel You Can Heal. Mm-hmm. Well, I haven't read it, but in it, it says that your spouse is the cause of all of your pain. I believe that. I think we're 100% responsible for everything in our life. But nevertheless, I have a husband who has terrible pain in his leg, and he says it's numb somewhere. Mm-hmm. And I will prepare him soda and vinegar foot baths to put in. And I, you know, now I will draw a triangle, two triangles, and we'll practice that breath. But nothing helps him.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling kind of responsible.
Oh,
that, you know, right. His negative thinking. I think the negative thinking is the poison of the person themselves. But how can I make him think positive? I ask myself.
But here's where the practice. You know what? Doing the practice yourself.
Yeah, right.
This I think. Okay, maybe we can be the reason for all of our pain.
Yeah.
But likewise, we could be the reason. We can be the reason for all of their happiness.
Helps. Exactly.
And so for doing well. You doing the. He may be, for whatever reason, there may be an inability for him to change, you see.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you can
laugh
change. And
yeah.
by you changing, you change the atmosphere
right.
and the vibration.
I think maybe it's psychosomatic and he just doesn't want to go out and play tennis, so he acquires that. But mm-hmm. that's not all of it, of course.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think that when we're close to people, they also become our mirror.
Yeah.
And I don't know in what context John Gray said that. I know he does a lot of work with the masculine and feminine principles, but you know, maybe that's also in the sense that he meant is
not
that
very deep. It's irresponsible. It's blame again, and that's
yeah.
immature.
Well, we can't say we need to read the whole book maybe to understand it.
Right? I'll try to allocate time to
it. Yeah. Get back with us next month. We'd like
right.
to do a report.
Okay.
But it was like, you know, like we were saying, we have to change the subject, about my cousin who had
uh-huh.
doing all the tests,
uh-huh.
got Medicare, so they're going to do all these tests, and there's nothing on the heart, but she's still going to feel different. See, that's what they're saying. It's in her head, not
it's
the doctors, but her sisters
it.
Are saying
she
it's in her head,
that.
And it's because she's got a great husband.
It's not okay.
And probably maybe
us.
It's her husband. But see, it's her head.
Yeah.
And that's what you're... But, you know, I kind of mix all this stuff with praying. So
yeah.
when I see that... I pray that he gets his mind changed.
Well, I'm
going to
show him the triangle,
changed.
And we're going to
uh-huh.
breathe in
uh-huh.
it.
Maybe don't even show him the triangle.
I'll
just breathe it.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
Oh, yeah. I could have him a lot healthier, I'm sure.
Oh.
No. I think you just pray that he...
Are there any comments from our Skype friends?
No, for this part.
I think that was surrender prayer, right?